Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone. No. Sounds like shit.
No, it was terrible.
So welcome everyone.
That was better.
Okay, I'll try this one then.
That sounded a lot better. That's good. We're onto something.
That sounded a lot better. We're onto something.
Yeah, that's how I talk. That's really funny.
It's really high on nasally.
Man, I'm a white guy who sounds white. How fucked up is that?
Fuck EDH. Fuck EDH. EDH my dick.
I like how you threw me into Howard Cosell.
What is happening?
Welcome to the wild world of sports. I'm Jason Alt. Yeah, there's Jordan nothing from the like 1920s, Jason, but I like see?
To say his phrases.
Yeah. Those are definitely my mannerisms.
Man, why, you got head trauma? You fucking hermetic, huh?
Don't be talking about EDH that way, see? Or you'll get rubbed out. You'll be sleeping with the fishes.
Okay. Well, that's
X-ray, read all about it. Vintage Masters Draft.
That's one way to welcome people to the podcast. Let's talk some Finance 101. Just moving right on past that. You know, starting every episode with some Finance 101. Today, we're going to be talking about trading. This is not going to be how do you get value off people in trading. This isn't a list of cards that people don't know what they're worth, because that's not the age we live in, and that's not how you should go about trading. What we do want to talk about is how you can use trading to both the benefit of you and the person you're trading with, and how you can use it to further your collection. So, you know, with that in mind, I think the most important thing when you're trading is to have a goal before you sit down at the table and start to trade, whether that goal is to turn your standard cards into older cards or your older cards into newer cards, or to finish a deck, or really, you know, whatever it is for you, that should be your goal. So, you know, when you guys go up to, you know, whether you're at a Grand Prix or a store, how do you guys go about, you know, engaging in trading nowadays?
Okay, so say I've got a $100 pile of standard cards. We've talked about spread in the past. Spread is it's a measure of dealer confidence. It's the difference between basically the TCG player sales price and the highest buy price. So if I've got $100 worth of cards with a 40% spread, I'm only getting $60 from a dealer. What I like to do is take that standard stuff with a high spread and turn it into stuff with a lower spread. And I don't care what those cards are. So if I trade a $5 card that the dealers are paying $2 for a $5 card they're paying $3 for, the person got a straight trade right across the board, didn't lose a cent in value. You know, and picked up a card they need for a card they don't want, and I picked up something with, a more favorable spread that either is going to go up or the dealer is just going to straight pay me more at that moment. I also like to see what the dealers are targeting, because if they've got anything that they're looking for, say they're like, oh, we need 40 copies of Mutavault by the end of the day, they'll pay more. You know, they'll pay a better percentage on those because they need them. So you just go trade for those. And even trading straight across the board and getting people cards they want, you're going to pick up cards like that and you're going to get paid a higher percentage. And that percentage difference is the profit you make. And you don't have to lie to anybody. And that's just – it's free money. So I like to do that.
So this is an example, of two people can walk into a trade with a different goal and both can walk out happy. For instance, my foil Merfolk deck in Modern that, you know, I love and have done nothing but trade into, I haven't bought any of the cards for it. When I see somebody who has a card that I need for it, I basically say, look at my binder and tell me what you want. And if it's anywhere within reason, I'm going to take it. So, I mean, this is basically how, you know, say Jason and I were trying to trade and he can walk away with more money, on that dealer and selling cards, feeling like he quote unquote won. And I'll get the card I need that I want for my deck and don't mind giving up a little value. And I think as long as you're upfront about it, that's really something a lot of people can appreciate. And they don't, you know, they don't won't necessarily stress about, oh, is he getting, you know, 50 cents more value on this than me? You know, those days I think are long past at this point.
And that's a good thing, because people are going to be more likely to trade if they're not worried about, oh, am I going to lose money on this? Another thing I like to do is I trade at next week's prices. So I don't know exactly what next week's prices are going to be, but if you do this for long enough and, you know, you're basically betting your money that a card's going to go up or down, I like to trade for cards that I think are going to go up. So even if it's straight across the board at this week's prices, if the prices are different next week, then you got value that way, trading straight across. So I definitely like – I have basically three tiers of cards that I'm speculating on. Stuff I'll pay cash for, stuff I'll trade for, and stuff I'm going to watch. So if I have a card that I'm looking to pick up and trade because I think it might go up, but I'm not willing to pay cash because I don't think the conditions are right, that's something I would trade for. So I'm not investing my money. I'm turning my card stock into that card. So that's another thing I'll target in trades.
So, Ryan, I know you do a lot of trading locally, both, you know, at home and then nationally, I guess you would say, at big events. You know, so how is your philosophy on trading? You know, what do you think is the best way to go about it, you know, given the day that we live in where everyone has a phone and everyone's worried about losing value? And how do you approach it?
I mean, it's a little bit different for me. I don't do a lot of just, I guess, what you would call like even trading. Most of what, and that's not always to say that I'm the person getting value either. I pick up a lot of foreign cards and buying massive amounts of collections. And so my best outlet for those, I usually send those with either myself or someone else who's going to show and have them trade those out. And I don't care necessarily even that I'm getting any value at all. I don't care that, you know, Star City or anybody else is selling it for more. If I can trade it into an English copy just so I can move that, that's important to me. That's a lot of times what I use the bigger events for. And then locally, I guess this has kind of come from the perspective of my local players just knowing me for so many years and knowing that this is my business and stuff and just building a reputation over time of being fair and stuff like that. But my guys come to me and they know I'm going to take about a 10% cut and I just trade it straight. I look at what I can sell it for on TCG player versus, you know, what I can sell it for on TCG player, and I take a 10% cut across the board. And most people are fine with that because I have a lot more cards than most of the other guys around here. It makes it so you're not going and shelling out a bunch of cash, and you're also not losing a bunch of value by having to buy list your cards necessarily. So it really depends on, you know, what your area is accommodating to. Clearly, you're not going to go in right off the bat and, you know, be able to get value off of a bunch of people, especially if you have a smaller card pool. But just being honest with people and, you know, building those relationships over time and people understanding that, you know, if you ask or if they ask you for cards, that if you can provide them, they're more than willing to usually give you a little percentage down the road. So I think that's an important lesson as well.
Yeah, I think what you touched on there, you know, building your reputation and those relationships is, you know, the most important thing there is in Magic Finance, I guess, no matter what you're doing. You know, I'm in the situation where I used to just, you know, trade a lot and have a bunch of cards. And now I actually, because, you know, I did it for long enough and people came to me and trusted me, the owner of the store made it more official. Now I actually sell cards out of the store, you know, because I put the years of work into that to build up that trust. So I think no matter where you're at in Magic Finance, whether you're, you know, brand new, just getting into the game, or whether you're somebody who does a lot of trading and, you know, looks for value, it's just to develop the most professional relationship you can so that people will always recommend you. So just leave your best impression on everybody. All right, so let's move into the email this week. We've got some good ones to choose from here. Let's start with one from Bryce. He says, as a bit of a preface, I'd like to start by saying that I'm not a very seasoned player. In fact, I've only been into Magic since New Phyrexia was released. Due to my experience, or lack thereof, I can end up being quite confused by keywords on cards or jargon used by players. Now, recently, other players in my local card shop have been discussing the meta of Standard and what it entails. I am, however, quite lost on the topic and was wondering if you could explain it in detail. Any information you could provide would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. Have a great day, Bryce. So, Marcel, do you want to take that? Just, you know, tell them, you know, in the simplest terms, what we mean when we talk about the meta of Standard or the and how that relates to the larger, you know, pool of Magic and Finance.
The meta is the breakdown of the deck archetypes within the format. So if, say, you had Standard not too long ago, you got Mono Blue Devotion, Mono Black Devotion, and Esper Control on Green-Red Monsters, and that's your meta. Those are the decks that are competitive. Those are the decks that are going to win tournaments consistently, And those are the decks that people play against and test against. So usually that's the meta. And that's when people talk about the meta, that's what's going on. So you'll have a legacy meta, you'll have a modern meta, you'll have a vintage meta, everything. And there's ebbs and flows depending on what format. Standard's a lot more volatile. Modern gets shaken up by bannings. And legacy, it just goes with the tides over time.
Right. So, you know, and it changes from week to week. So you look at something like Voice of Resurgence, which is a very powerful card, has a powerful effect. It's very good in modern. But then you look at standard, and it's only played in maybe like one deck. It's not hugely popular. It's not just dominating. And you say, well, why is that? Well, right now in standard, you have the Esper decks, the blue-white decks, a bunch of decks that play cards like Last Breath, which will exile it from the game. So, you know, then it's just a bear. You don't really get that, you don't get the bonus from when it dies. So in other points in standard, if people weren't playing Last Breath, for instance, Voice of Resurgence could be very good, or Anger of the Gods, but they are. So with those cards in, the meta is not welcoming to something like Voice of Resurgence. So that changes, you know, pretty regularly. If something happens so that people begin to not play those cards, well, then all of a sudden the meta is very open to Voice Resurgence, and it changes week in and week out. So I think that's probably the gist of the way that works.
And another thing is, like, certain cards that may seem powerful, Dragon's Maze, there's a lot of cards from Ravnica and Dragon's Maze that we thought were going to make an impact on Standard, like Exava, Advent of the Worm. But the way that the meta played out, that Mono Black Devotion, Mono Blue Devotion was so powerful that these cards just had no chance to shine, even though they would probably be very, you know, major players in a different type of standard. So, you know, depending on the meta, certain cards that may look good, may look like good, you know, calls, financial calls, actually end up not being that great. So paying attention to the meta is definitely what you would want to do by making your right picks and seeing what, you know, where the major decks are. Is there, you know, strategies to upseed them? And is there any cards that will make these strategies stronger?
Financially, I think that's, when it comes to predicting the future of cards, seeing how stuff fits into that meta, like you said, is much more important than just being able to know how powerful a card is. So that's why things really get shaken up when rotation happens, because it's, when Magic 2015 comes out, it's very easy to see how the cards in it will affect the current meta, because you can kind of plug and play. When you lose a bunch, like Return to Ravnica block rotating and a new block coming in come rotation in October, then the meta completely shakes up, and that's what keeps Magic fresh.
There you go. That's Finance 101 number two. Man, this cast keeps them going.
Well, now let's go something a little more complicated than that with Vintage Masters. Marcel, I will let you take it away because I know you are all over this.
Holy shit. Was it a roller coaster like none other? Vintage Masters, we're talking about the financial aspect. Ryan, I know he wants to talk about a bunch of decks because Vintage Masters is a blast of fun to play. Like, it's, you really want to play some more Vintage Masters. And that's what happened. People wanted to play Vintage Masters. People wanted to draft, and that's what happened. When you heard the cast, when we did it last time, that the packs were being opened only if you played the Legacy 2-mans or Vintage 2-mans and completed them, and people had packs, and they were just busting them randomly. Well, the pre-releases came, and pre-releases traditionally are when people get their first hands on the cards, and you have to pay tickets to enter events, and you can't use packs to recycle in events. Well, this was different this time, that you could actually use your prize packs to re-enter events, and that the pre-release was just basically a glorified release. You get a different bonus card by entering the event. So prices came out, and traditionally, you know, prices are the highest during pre-release. So they came out, and you had Black Lotus at $250. You had the Moxie at about $150. You had like Force of Will and Lion's Eye Diamond going about $30, $35. And so that was the initial price. You saw stuff like Workshop going for about $20. And, you know, you've seen high prices. Duels were, you know, it's like the blue duels were going for about $20 and then $10 for the other ones. So the prices were high. People weren't touching nothing. They're just letting it go. So people were just, you know, everyone was scared. Dealers only had like two copies of cards in their stock. They didn't want to touch it. It was iffy. A lot of people just didn't know what was going to happen. And then prices, you know, as supply started to come out, people were drafting, supply came in, and you've seen prices started to decline, as you would expect it to. power is moving a little slower, but then you started seeing the staples. Within the first day, you saw Force of Will going to 15 tickets. You saw Lion's Eye Diamond at 15 tickets. You've seen all the dual lands were under 15. A lot of them were for five for like scrub land, for Badlands. Like you could pick up amazing deals. And the mocks were slowly going from about like 180 going down. I mean, the Black Lotus was like going to about 200 to 180, somewhere in that range. And it finally hit, there was like a crossing point in the middle of Saturday. So the pre-releases started Friday. And then by Saturday night, basically the prices of those key rares, like the Force of Will and the Lion's Eye Diamond, started to climb upwards. So they went from the 15, which was the absolute bottom, and they started to go towards 20 and 25 and climbing upwards. Well, the Moxes were moving down at the same time. The Power 9 was moving down at the same time. So you had basically Black Lotus going all the way down to 140. The Moxes were about 60 to 65. And that was, and Time Spiral or Time Twister was all the way down to 27 tickets. So people were like, you know, oh, it's continuing to drop. Like we've seen the Moxes drop, you know, or we've seen the Power 9 drop incredibly over this time. So people were still not trying to touch Power 9. They were thinking there's going to be $40 Moxes. Well, I happened to buy in at this point because, again, the spreads were getting insane. They were so close, and I was as worried. And I literally bought in at the lowest point because the next day, they started to climb, and now we're back at it. Like 2-3 days later, you got $225 Black Lotuses. The Moxes are about $100 right now. The prices have stabilized on Force of Will. You're now still getting $35 Force of Wills, $35 LEDs. So the prices are stable in the Mythics and Rares. Everything has stabilized, but the Moxes are still pretty high. And now people are speculating possibly that we're going to see more price drop because the release events are here. There's going to be more price, and more prizes are going to be open. And I believe Card Nexus has did analysis. I believe there was between 1,000 to 2,000 packs being opened per hour. So that's roughly the 1 to 2 sets of power being opened per hour. So we probably, within the wilds, there's a neighborhood about 450 to 500 sets right now at this time. This is a Tuesday. So that's how many sets are out there. But I don't know. People don't think the prices are going to hold and the prices are going to maintain and that you know, the supply is going to come in and bring it back down to normal. But, you know, a lot of I don't know. I don't think people are going to play this nearly as much as people think because the EV is just not nearly as high. And it's an interesting thing. It's a definitely interesting thing. Oh, and one more thing is that Standard got affected. Like, across the board in Moto, Standard got depreciated by a good, say, 25%. A lot of this across the board, it was red. Everything there was going down because people were selling all their Standard cards so that they could play Vintage Masters. So you were able to get into Journey of the Nyx and to a lot of the Theros block for pretty cheap if you were a grinder. Like, that was the time because everyone was selling off. Prices were going there. So, like, Vintage Masters created this turmoil for Magic Online. A lot of bots were just... They didn't know how to handle it. They weren't happy. So you can say Atom Bomb definitely dropped.
That is a really, really good analysis of everything that happened there. I mean, for someone like me who doesn't really play Moto and just kind of knows that it's happening, man, it's crazy how fast that it moves. You know, literally in the course of 24 hours, you go from, you know, a release to a valley to peaking back up again. It's kind of nuts. It definitely rewards the person following along closely.
It takes essentially the first 2 weeks in real life Magic and condenses into about 24 to 48 hours.
Right.
Yeah. Normally you would have a greater window, like normal pre-releases, like because you cannot use your regular packs to get into more events. People only can spend tickets that you'll see a less amount of people playing. But because this pre-release was actually like a regular release event, people were just playing and people were playing packs and they were just cycling through and just like I've never seen nothing move this fast before. Like, you know, this was insane. This is like in the middle of a pro tour and you start seeing emerging decks and you start seeing emerging cards and people are buying cards based off of pro tour speculation and things are moving in directions that way, like the way things were moving. It was literally just nuts. Like, you had to be on it.
All right. So before we get into, you know, what fun you guys actually had playing with it, I have a question for you, Marcel, with the finance of it. Now, kind of my take on something like this, you know, not being regular user of it is a lot of people want to play Vintage Masters, and that makes sense. It's like Cube with power. It's great. I also think those people, like you said, a lot of standard cards zip because people were selling to get into the power. I think that people will take that power, see how much they can get for it. When you get $180 for a Mox, sell the Mox. That funds a whole bunch of Theros and M15 drafts. So, like, I'm of the opinion that a bunch of people play Vintage Masters. Not as many people will play Vintage. So is that kind of your take? And, you know, what if you're somebody who, say, you want to play Vintage Masters but you don't want to play Vintage, or if you're somebody who does want to play Vintage, how do you, you know, kind of bridge the, you know, the next couple weeks of this?
I think that's, like, just looking at it from the wrong perspective. I mean, there's – you could say by – there's going to be enough of a Vintage, you know, demand that the supply is going to be taken care of because enough people are opening packs. And, I mean – It's kind of an unfair comparison, almost. I mean, Vintage Masters is okay. Obviously going to be more accessible because more people can play. All they got to spend is $25. They don't have to get into a deck. But I think Vintage is I've already started to see a lot more people playing. There's queues going off. I think it's going to be a little bit more popular around the world, and people that are pros. I've seen quite a few pros, like, they want to pick up a play set of power. And, you know, this is the place to play. So I think Vintage is going to actually pick up, and there will be the demand there. What I think the big problem is that people are being just bled dry. Like, there's a liquidity problem.
Okay.
Like, you just had Journey into Nyx, you got Conspiracy, now you got Vintage Masters, and we got M15 in, like, a couple months or a month or something.
Right.
People don't have that much money. That's why Standard just imploded. Is because people are taking everything out of Standard. They want to play some Vintage Masters because they don't have enough money. They're being bled dry by Wizards. And, I mean, this is a great set. This is cool and everything. But I think, like, the spacing of all these releases is just – it's almost unfair to the player base. It's like, you know
– Wow.
I mean, think about it. It's like you want to play some Conspiracy, but then you want to play some Vintage Masters. You really have to make a decision. You got to do one or the other. I don't have a decision Conspiracy. Because I'm paper –
It's a good problem to have, right? It's a good problem to have.
The thing is, they're aimed towards different crowds, though, too.
Right.
It's like Vintage Masters is aimed towards a very different crowd than Conspiracy is, for sure.
I
could see the argument with Journey into Nyx being so close, but, I mean, that's just how they're doing these specialty sets now. It's like they release them in the summer, which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, I think, like, the winter, like, literally, the winter is the longest period in Standard. You only get four sets or five sets if you count the core. So you got the smallest amount of cards in Standard. You got the longest amount of time in Standard, and
nobody has extra money to spend at Christmas, right?
That is true. That is
like
true.
You look at historical graphs for cards. They always they pick up in October with like Standard rotation, whatever. In November, December, they even out. Then they pick up again in January, and that's because people are doing the holidays. They're not playing Magic. Even if you remove the money equation, people just aren't playing as much Magic, so it's much spending time with family. So I'm with Ryan. I really don't know. I think those two were aimed at different crowds. You have to put them all in the summer. You know, that's my take on it too. And at the same time, like, it's a pretty first world problem to have, right? If your options are between buying a box of Conspiracy and doing Vintage Masters.
I think their concept of it, too, is, like, if you're a real-world player and an MTGO player, you probably have some extra money anyway. And if you don't,
right.
Like, self to one or the other, I guess.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hashtag that's the problem.
Yeah, like, I don't play Magic Online. Conspiracy was great for me. You don't play paper, and Vintage Masters is great for you, you know? Like, I don't know how much of an overlap there is.
I think, if anything, it's just nice to see them supporting Magic Online. And if anything, they're going to – I mean, we were talking about the power and if we think it's sustainable. I think not only are you going to have the pros doing it, but anyone who wants to play Vintage now – I know plenty of people who are semi-pro at best that have a Vintage deck together. And that is a much more enticing idea to spend $1,000 and just get into it online and always have people to play against. And I think that until you kill the demand with that crowd, you're going to have a tough time – like dropping
right.
the price.
So here's my thought. Okay. I think maybe, you know, people get, cause the ultimate question behind all of this is what's going to happen to the power. If you open a Mox or you know, what's going to happen to that stuff in 6 months or a year's time?
It's going to be way up.
Well, yeah. Right. The question, I think a lot of people may get into it now. They play Vintage for a while, whatever. I think when Standard season comes around, and you know, these people want to, they need their points. You know, they want to try for the mocks. They need to do some more. They need to enter some more events. And oh, I've got this $180 mocks right here. Maybe I'll just sell that because think of how far that'll take me.
I think that's the wrong crowd, Corbin.
The people who are going playing vintage online for the most part are people that don't need to sell that mocks to play standard. And not because they're going to necessarily play it a ton in the fall when standard's out, but because come this time again next year when they're looking for something new and interesting, they can go back to vintage because it's still fun.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that. I can see that for sure. So I think then with that said, we do all agree that has the power reached the bottom? Is it we all think it's going to be more a year from now than it is now, but you know, has it bottomed out or is it going to bottom out in 2 weeks or a month or what?
I would let people draft more before I said anything. And there's something that people really aren't talking about. Everyone's talking about the effect on vintage, which really didn't exist on Moto. This has really tanked the prices on some legacy cards, and I think people might be just as inclined to use this as an entree to legacy on Moto as they are vintage. And legacy is a much more robust format. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, actually, that's exactly what I'm doing. I don't care about the power at all. If I open a piece, I mean, I may put together a set eventually, but I just don't feel the need to right now. But I want to finish Spanish Inquisition. That deck's now possible with a Cruel Bargain. And they've really opened this up a lot with random cards like that, letting a lot more of the legacy decks be viable, meaning that it's definitely going to make that more accessible. But on top of that, it's also makes a lot of those prices, like the Force of Wills, go down. Your dual lands, like, you can get Bayous right now for $8. That is insane. Go buy your set of dual lands right now.
Yeah,
like, they are never getting cheaper. I don't care. You're doing it wrong if you don't have your set of duels and you actually want them.
There's a certain point where, like, even if they get any cheaper just because of the supply, you know, getting pushed up, speculation's going to move in, and, like, I don't think they can get cheaper because
it's not buy at this price. I'm pretty sure like that encompasses the power too. That's just where you're at. If it does go down anymore, it's going to be such a minuscule percentage to the chance of it going up, and you will never see it go lower again. Like,
right. Okay.
If it starts going up, which it already has started going up very quickly, you're less likely. It's the same thing like when they did Zendikar drafts. They did a re-release of it or whatnot. Immediately, the fetch lands tanked. Down to some of them were like $8 to $12. And the next day afterwards, they had already started progressing back to 15. And by the end of that, while they were still being drafted, they were 25.
Right. So Ryan, you think that those cards across the board are bottomed out right now? Yes.
I think especially the staples, because I mean, everyone has the same mentality. I knew Vintage Masters was coming. I'm going to buy all of these things if I need them for a deck. And it doesn't – I don't think in specialty sets like this where it's the only way you can get a lot of these cards that you're really going to ruin the prices. I think if anything, you're going to have some of the legacy stuff maybe go up a little slower, but I'm pretty sure it's just about bottomed out. I mean
– No, I think you're wrong.
I think it was only a week or two, and this has 3 weeks.
Sure. Okay. So, Marcel, why don't you weigh in? You think they're going to go – you don't think they're bottomed out yet?
I think they're stable. I think that there's the supply that people are talking about hasn't reached yet. This is still, I guess, the pre-release period. The bottom was Saturday. If you were to buy in on Saturday, you hit the bottom. If you didn't, then you missed out. I still would probably pick up Force of Wills at 35, 34. You can't lose. I don't think it's going to go back to 15 again, ever. I think that was just an overcorrection by the market. So I don't think it's necessarily the bottom. I think there's some room for it to go down, but it's definitely not a bad thing to pick up. I mean, the dual lands could probably come down more because they are rare, so there's probably more likelihood that you'll see those, and then those may come down a little bit because they're still roughly around, like, the Masters Edition prices, which are much rarer. But right now I'm looking at Black Lotus. It's at $300 right now. It just shot up another $75. So,
Marcel, check out those dual prices because the Masters Edition ones on there are, like, $23, $24. For, like, the Bayou, and I know when I looked up my Vintage Masters ones, it was 8.
Yeah, the Bayou, but if you talk about the blue ones, like, Underground Sea is 23.
Oh, sure.
And Vintage Masters, where it's, like, 25 in Masters Edition, where it used to be close to 15. Yeah.
Fair. You can clearly tell which duel I've opened. I've actually opened 2 Bayous and no other ones.
Mad, huh?
So, I mean, I'm not mad. It's kind of funny because for Spanish Inquisition, I need 1 Bayou. And so I opened it, pick one, pack one at the first draft I did. I was like, well, shoot, I can cross that $12 off my list. And I opened another one. And like since then, I've just opened like nothing great. But I've had a ton of time or a ton of fun playing the format.
Yeah, have you gotten a chance? So, let's talk about that. What kind of sweet decks have you guys got in this format?
I want to make one more point.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that also that people, the supply is going to dry up sooner than people may expect. So Ryan could be right. This could be just absolute bottom. If people were to draft this heavily, then you'll see prices continue to drop and then maybe a little bit a slower drop. But I think people's funds are dry. I think people that played it would be like, you know, I spent $120 in playing Vintage Masters and I didn't get a single Mox and all I got is a couple of dual lands that are $8. Like people are going to get burnt out. And I think less people are actually going to play Vintage Masters, prices go up. So if you want to get in, like, get in now. But at the same time, if you wanted to be weary and wait a little bit, it's not the end of the world.
Okay. So what kind of, past the finance stuff, how much fun is Vintage Masters to play?
Blue-green madness. That's all I have to say.
Like that, but it just seems like everyone's playing blue-green madness. It seems like it's going to be.
Yeah, that's all I've heard about.
Fighting over it seems really
boring. The entire deck is there because the entire deck was all commons, uncommons, pretty much. And you're going to get the pieces, and the deck is just like the old constructed deck, and it does not feel fair in that format. You have answers to everything, and you have really efficient creatures, and you have blue, which is just the best color in Magic.
Yeah, I've actually seen some people that have some good green-blue madness decks, and it just didn't come together for them, right? You know, like, there's still some powerful decks out there, and yeah, people are playing it, but you can still create a good stuff deck and just win. And yeah, the goblins are nuts. Like, if you get the goblin deck going, it is.
No one's insane. Fighting you for goblins either. Three people are going to fight over blue-green madness.
Yeah, goblins aren't going to like, right? Nobody wants
someone's going
to
gonna open
there's
a...
two goblins players, because a number of the goblins are okay by themselves anyway. Like, Goblin Goon is perfectly acceptable. Like, you're probably not getting that guy super late. If you start seeing those late, just take them and go goblins.
And the Beetleback Goblin's pretty clean.
Yeah, that guy's good. I mean, you obviously want the War Chiefs and the Ringleaders. That's the problem, is the two that you really need for the deck are both uncommon. So it makes that deck a little more difficult, because like sometimes it's just not at the table. Like, you can draft it all you want. You see a couple of the good commons, you get some matrons, and then you just don't get a single War Chief, and your deck falls apart.
One card that's the absolute bomb, I think, is Battle Screech. That is a reason to go play white. It's the Green Souls.
That's the one that makes tokens, and then you can flash it back by tapping three.
Yeah, by tapping three white and get more.
That card is insane. It's Lingering Souls, like, dude. It's pretty much just Lingering Souls. Like, that's what that card is.
Yeah, and then the Grizzly. What is it? The
Grizzled Fate or Grizzled Fate?
Grizzled Fate. I had a deck with. I had three of the Battle Screeches and two of the Grizzly Fate, and it was just all the tokens all the time, baby. That's how we play.
Yeah, I mean, I've split in the finals of two of them. I lost in the finals of one. I lost in the second round of two, and I think I've lost in the first round of two of them. So, like, I'm not doing great overall, but, like, the format itself is really fun. I've drafted a couple of decks that just didn't come together. Like, I had, like, a green-white good stuff earlier and played against Storm game one, and I didn't have a Gilded Light in my sideboard, so that was the end of that story. Mm. But, it's crazy because it's just, like, Modern Masters, except, you know, with a much... larger card pool to draw from, I guess. But they really did do a good job picking cards. Like, I was surprised when I saw the spoiler, because there was a lot of cards I just thought were kind of out of left field. But they make a lot of sense when you start playing the format. There's really not a bad card in the set that I can say.
No,
which is
odd.
There's some less than playable ones. I guess there's probably a couple that are pretty bad. But there's even the ones that you just look at and you're like, oh, I don't want to ever play this. Maybe not main deck, but there's always like... So, like Gilded Light, like I don't want Shroud main deck even if it cycles. However, versus the Storm deck that happens to be out there, that card's actually really good.
I mean, I agree that this format is very fun, and I can't wait to play some more. The only thing is, I think $25 is a little too much for my taste, and I could afford to pay for it. And so I'm just waiting for the Phantom Drafts, and I think once the Phantom Drafts come out, I'm going to play a lot of this because they did a lot of work. They got the decks are fun to play. All colors are playable, and, you know, you get picks all the way to the end. It feels like Cube, not quite like Cube, but, you know.
How do the Phantom Drafts work?
Phantom Drafts is you get, you basically pay Cube packs or Cube tickets, I mean. You get Cube tickets, and you pay, like, $8, and you're able to play, and you get Cube tickets as a prize. Mm-hmm. And you could use those tickets to enter into more Phantom events, so you could chain them together.
But you don't get to keep the cards, right?
You don't get to keep none of the cards. Okay. And And I played these, and you barely see the money cards. So, like, I have no problem paying less money and not keeping any of the cards because the odds of you actually getting something versus how many times you don't get nothing is worth it. So if you feel heartbroken because you see a foil Black Lotus in your Phantom pack, it may be a little heartbreaking, but you know what? It's better than spending the real money.
Okay. So while you guys have been busy with Vintage Masters, I've actually drafted Conspiracy a few times, you know, for all the paper players out there. I still don't think I prefer it over, like, you know, quote-unquote a real draft. Like, I chose to do Journey into Nyx over Conspiracy one time last week. But I have done a few. And I guess it's kind of the same thing. They probably went through the same process. You know, not only does Conspiracy have the really cool cards, you know, like Dag Fade and the Legacy stuff, all the reprints kind of thrown in there. It's pretty fun to draft. So the most fun, I think, and the best deck I've had has definitely been the Vent Sentinel deck. If you don't know, and you probably don't, Vent Sentinel is from, like, Rise of the Eldrazi, and it's a 2/4 defender that can tap for a couple of mana and deal damage equal to the number of defenders you control to a player. So basically, I drafted just, like, 4 Vent Sentinels, a whole bunch of defenders, a bunch of walls, a bunch of, like, stall spells, and conspiracies to give them haste and cost less mana. And it was just insane. I just sit at the table and I just have a bunch of walls nobody wants to attack into. And then I would just ping people out with Vent Sentinels. It's a lot of fun. They definitely, I think, you know, given that I'm not somebody who's really into casual formats in the first place, the fact that I've enjoyed Conspiracy, I think, kind of tells me that they've been successful with it. You know, not only are the Legacy cards in there, but it's a fun draft format for everybody. So, you know, talking about those Legacy cards, we've got Siphle, Misdirection, all this stuff. Obviously, we know that the foils, those stuff, Brainstorm, for instance, the foil Brainstorms, they're going to be a big deal. But what about the rest of that stuff? Say, non-foil Siphle. You know, where do you guys see that stuff going, you know, a couple months from now or a year from now? Is this something that the demand is such that putting this many more out there kind of tanks the market and it's just going to stagnate? Or do you think it's going to pick up, you know, fairly quickly moving forward?
It's hard to tell. Something like Exploration – that was an Urza's Saga. The supply on that is just so low. It's just so low. And with Conspiracy being this much fun to draft, and stores getting pretty heavily allocated, like, I think it's going to trickle out. So they're like, oh, we're not going to do a limited print run, but with stores only getting the boxes 10 at a time or something ridiculous like that, like, I think people will draft this for a little longer. So not only do I think this is going to affect the supply of Journey into Nyx, because I think this will get drafted preferentially over that. Yeah. I think we are going to see a smoother addition of copies into the format, and I think the prices will come down a little bit more smoothly. But God, like, we have to be doubling or tripling the number of expirations out there.
That's how I felt about that too.
Something like Misdirection, like a lot of those cards that were printed, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We're getting a lot of copies out there.
Well, and Siphle is basically in a free fall right now, and I kind of expect that to continue. I think once they bottom out that Siphle will continue to pick up. I think something like Exploration that is basically played in one Legacy deck is just probably done. Like, I don't think that card's going to be financially relevant again for a while.
And people weren't like, oh, I want to play a fucking $9,000 lands deck in Legacy, but right. I can't because I don't have a $30 exploration.
Exactly.
Like, that wasn't holding people up. So it's not like, you know, demand is going to spike either. It's really good for EDH, though. A lot of stuff like that we're saying Legacy is taking splash damage. There's a lot of good EDH stuff in Conspiracy.
Squirrel Nest.
I think some of the Legacy stuff, like, is almost incidental.
Yeah.
Even Exploration, though, is still, like, very much a commander card, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was saying. It's sort of like, I think EDH is going to be more affected. A card like Misdirection, not so much, or Stifle necessarily, but, like, if you look at some of the EDH staples that are in Conspiracy, you know, I think that format is going to prop some of those cards up.
Well,
not enough, especially if we're, like, doubling or tripling or quadrupling the total supply.
Well, yeah, and it's like, especially, you know, say like Exploration. people who want it for Commander most likely will just want the cheapest copy, and that's the new one, which there are plenty of. So, you know, the original printing of Exploration, I think it's just probably just going to flatline for a long time to come. And I think, you know, I think Stifle will continue to free fall and then plateau. And I just I think it a lot of these cards in Legacy, their prices are not going to rebound anytime soon. So I'm not particularly interested in buying into them. It's the Commander cards, you know, as more conspiracy comes out, those Commander cards are, I think, what I'm more interested in picking up going forward from the set.
But here's something interesting, because we didn't have a foil Exploration before, and now we do.
Right. Yeah.
The so foils for like are the high end Legacy decks, and for, you know, the high end EDH decks, those foils are going to become a chase thing, and you know that's not increasing the supply of Explorations as much as it is like creating the supply of foil Explorations, and that's
right.
That's something to explore a little. I don't laugh at that, you idiot.
Those are actually very low right now, or at least they were last we checked. Like last week, foil Explorations, I believe, were like 60, which
that,
really
that seems non-correct. It seems like there's if you've got an opportunity for anything, I think, you know, non-foils will continue to tank, but like I feel like those foils seem incorrectly priced to me.
They're 50 right now for foil Exploration. I mean, like you said, how many?
Right? I mean, I feel like that has to be the truth behind it.
Yeah, but I mean, how many foil?
It's just like the you know, the Vintage Masters discussion. Like the chance of it going down much more. Like it's certainly never going below 30. Like it would not make sense for that card to ever be below 30. So the cheapest it's ever going to go is 30. And next you look in a couple of weeks, it may be 100. You never know. Like it just depends on how quickly that catches up.
Yeah, I mean, that really feels to me kind of like a speculation sort of buyout. More, I don't know. I don't want to say buyout. If the price of that card moves, I think it will move because of dealers and speculators, because there simply are not that many foil lands players on the planet.
No, but I think there are that many people who play Exploration in their Commander decks and would like to foil it out.
Yeah,
I'm not saying go pick it up if you want to make money on it. I'm saying if you need them or you're looking for something to like trade into that you think has good long-term value, those foils are not bad right now.
Right.
Like I don't know that I'd spend 40 cash because it has to hit at least 70 or 80 to even get your money back out of that.
Right.
But I can certainly see it being fine to target in trades because it's not going down much lower. It's not like they're threatening another reprint anytime soon.
And Dak Faden, what are your guys' thoughts on that? I mean, he's a
where I expected him to. He's actually still a little higher. I think he's going to settle around 15.
He's still 30. I think I really don't understand the hubbub.
He's a solid 30 right now and has been that way for the past like week and a half.
I mean, you're looking at retail numbers, which just haven't adjusted yet.
Looking at TCG players. Yeah,
TCG players much more realistic. Like you can get foil Explorations on there for 40. Regular ones are about 9 or 10. And I'm looking at Dak Faden right now, but I believe he's around 20.
He is 29.16 TCG.
That's
price.
Around 20, right?
Oh, so he's gone back up. He's not.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't moved.
There's a near mint copy in stock for $22.83.
Ryan, you're looking at the
$6 shipping.
Yeah, you should be looking at the low. What are you looking at, the mid? That's not the real number that you're going to buy it for.
What's the low guy charging for shipping? Because if he's charging $4
$0.99.
For shipping,
the lowest one is $22.
Are we really gonna have? Are we really gonna have this conversation about the low and mid? You just use the mid to track price changes. It's never the cheapest copy you can get. Everybody understands that.
Because there's one guy selling it that copy. That's
I mean, come on,
a real thing. This is Finance 101. Let's teach Ryan.
What are we doing
a little
here?
Bit about Finance 101.
I'm really confused about what you guys actually use TCG mid.
For what?
We were very different numbers.
To what?
Because so TCG mid is what here? 28. There are
29, 25. Like
hold on, give me a second. Give me a second.
Oh,
there are 1, 12, 13, 14, 34, 37. There are 41 copies on the first page that are all below $24.
Nobody's saying that median doesn't mean shit. Nobody's ever going to dispute that, but the median is an average and the low is not. So when you're tracking historical movements for a card, you always use the thing that is an average. That's just I don't think anybody has ever listened to
our. He's talking about what you're going to buy at. So when I'm looking at
the
prices that I'm
going
to buy at, I will look at the cheapest price for a playset. Like a guy with one copy, like whatever.
I think it's going to be around 15. I don't think it's hit its bottom yet.
All right. So I think there we go. I think we do all agree from whatever metric we're using, the deck Faden has some room to go down.
Oh God, yeah. Like, who wants a deck Faden? Can we talk about Finance 201? And the topic is who wants deck Faden?
There's a couple of vintage decks that are already playing around with him, and he's definitely relevant in Legacy. I don't know how good he is, but I've seen sneak attack decks like Sneak and Show trying to run him.
Yeah, I think I saw it on camera.
I don't know.
He's more than cute. That plus one is pretty fucking relevant.
Yeah, I mean it's
like
cost
with all
three
the draw
penalty
you're
going
to have anyway, and all the cheaty things you're doing. All you're trying to do is assemble a combo, and there's not much better way. And the gain control of target artifact is fairly relevant.
Seal target Batter Skull, target Jitte.
Yeah, exactly. Like it kind of shuts down Stoneblade. It keeps you from getting True Named out of the game right away. Like there's a lot of things that this guy prevents.
Yeah, I think the fact that for three mana you can seal the Batter Skull is pretty huge.
I think I like him a lot more in Vintage just because like his colors matter so much. I don't know, like maybe new deck archetypes pop up, and we're certainly seeing a lot of blue-red in Legacy. It's just not the kind of decks that want him necessarily.
Well, I think
I can
like
see him in Sneak and Show, and I can definitely see him out of the board.
Rug Delver? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but no, like, he doesn't fit into that curve. Like maybe
Rug Delver doesn't play cards that cost three unless they're winning them the game.
Right. Wow. That's kind of how I feel about it. But I'm not going to dismiss anything out of hand because I would like to see people that actually brew decks brew with him before we make any pronouncements, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, like, I was playing around with some reanimator archetypes with him, too. I mean, kind of more the reanimator control where you're like a turn four, turn five dredge deck rather than you're much more consistent, but you're less likely to be blown out by hate. That could be a potential possibility just because we've never had anything that's consistently been like this and is that
well,
you can
okay.
use every turn to be able to further that. So yeah, there could be some new archetypes, but I think Sneak and Show is definitely the primary one that's going to see play and that's already established if it sees any play at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first – there was one Rug Delver deck that used Deck Faden in the top eight of the Star City Open last week. There was another Delver deck that did not that was in those colors. So it seems like they're kind of split
I feel like that could also just
it.
Be that guy running hot with Rug Delver and happen to put Deck Faden in his deck.
Was he in the board?
No, it was a one of in the main deck. So yeah,
wow, that's
something
it's
awesome. Right now.
The main, really?
That means nearly nothing to me.
Yeah, I mean, you can also, it's a week after, so we'll see. I think there definitely has some potential. Deck Faden will come down in the short term, but once people are done drafting Conspiracy, it's going to be pretty hard to get hold of Deck Faden. So once it does bottom out, I think it's probably just going to stay high or stay headed back up. So the big one other big piece of news this week was Star City announcing that in addition to Legacy Opens on Sundays, they will be running Modern 5Ks, Super IQs, I believe they are. So a lot of people have said that this is going to cause Modern prices to spike again. Of course, people also said that PTQ season was going to cause Modern prices to spike again, and that has not occurred. What do you guys think about how big of an impact is SCG announcing, some form of Modern support going to have on the market?
All right. Well, actually, let me take this one for a second, because I was just talking about this with somebody yesterday, not about the SCG thing in particular, but I think this is definitely going to have an impact on the prices. I think it's going to clearly make them go up because – more players aren't going to hurt them by any means. But I think the reason we're not seeing a lot of these Modern prices spike this year like we assumed they would is because the past 2 years, most people getting into Modern are just that, getting into Modern and buying their first deck. And we're finally in the third year now, and we're seeing a lot more people who already have a deck and are already ready for a Modern season. So there's just not as much of a move when this season comes around because you have people that have these established decks. Not much has changed from PTQ season last year. There's a couple of new cards in each deck. There's maybe a couple of new archetypes, but if you want to play the same deck you did last year, you don't have to switch it up. And I think that's a really relevant part this year.
Why are we even talking about Modern? Because this is the announcement everyone has been waiting for that spent 2 years saying Legacy's dead. And SCG said all along, no, we're reaffirming our commitment to Legacy. We have no interest in replacing Legacy with Modern. And here we have the dwindling Sunday crowd being split between Modern and Legacy. I think this will more profoundly affect the price of Legacy cards than it will Modern cards. I think this is going to have people speculating on legacy cards, try to dump them. I think people are going to be selling. I think it's going to create, you know, panic just like it did the last time when everyone thought SCG was toying with the idea of not supporting legacy. So, like, this is what everybody, all the doomsayers wanted to happen. It's happening. And I think we can't ignore the fact that they're going to have fewer people playing legacy on Sundays at SCG Opens. That's going to affect the price profoundly. And I don't think, like, the fact that Wizards is already running modern events that are much bigger and it's, you know, PTQ season and all that, I think that, you know, that, you know, SCG Opens having the event might have an effect, but like, this is a bigger deal for Legacy than it is for Modern.
So you really think people are going to be selling Legacy cards? I mean, do you think prices on Dual Lands are coming down?
Shit, I hope so. Like, I think they were only up because SCG had that Legacy GP. Like, I thought that stuff was up artificially. And I don't know why Star City would shoot itself in the dick like that by, you know, raising all those prices and having all their inventory worth so much and then not support the format as much. It doesn't make sense to me.
I understand that, but people still, I mean, for right or wrong, and, you know, to this point it's been for right, that people just always say, hey, Dual Lands are this much. Guess they're going to always be at least this much. So, I mean, you actually think the trend's going to buck here?
Man, I really don't know, because I think all the behavior around this is super irrational, and it always has been.
I think the answer is no. I mean, I'll stand by that. I've been the one
to say Ryan.
Going up. Like,
I would love to buy it. People
who
want
to play Legacy at these Opens are still going to play Legacy. This just invites more people from Saturday to still be able to play on Sunday. That's the way I look at it. I don't think you're going to suddenly see a steep drop-off in the Legacy. Like, I'm sure there will be some, but I don't think you're going to lose more than maybe a 10% of what your average crowd would be. I think you're just going to see a lot of people who want to stay for their Saturday and Sunday now because they have a lot.
I think, if anything, it keeps the Dual Lands from spiking again, but I don't think they're going anywhere. And when we talk about Dual Lands, you know, I usually use that as my default, you know, measure of faith in Legacy, but I don't think they're going I don't think they're going down.
Yeah, I'd like to buy if people are panic selling. It is not like there was anything, there was nothing going on before on Sunday. The Legacy was the only thing going on. There were other events. There was Standard IQs and Win a Box and Two at a Giant and all that bullshit. Yeah. So, you know, I think the fact that there was already stuff going on. I think this is the announcement that the doomsayers have been waiting for, and I think that irrational behavior is going to be going on. I think we need to be mindful of that. I don't actually think that just having another offering on Sunday is going to make Legacy suddenly, you know, not be a format people are playing.
I think this is either direction you hold on to them, because either people fire sale because they're freaking out and, you know, doomsaying or whatnot, and then they go back up in the next 6 months anyway, or they don't do anything and then you're not selling your cards for no reason. Like, there's no point when these don't stay at least stable. I mean, you still have the Commander devotion, like the Legacy. Like, I think the competitive Legacy crowd is such a small part at this point of what, or not necessarily a small part, but it's not the major pushing factor even for duels anymore. I think you have probably just as many people who are trying to jam them in Commander decks. Maybe not always, you know, filling out their entire 10 set or whatnot, but there's plenty of people that are playing them in Commander when they can get their hands on them. And it's not just the SCG crowd that's driving that price.
So let's just briefly then touch on Modern. Because I think what Ryan said earlier, and it's something that I agree with, is that Modern is waiting for the next big thing. And I don't think the next big thing is SCG having a Modern 5K. I still think people are waiting. The average player either is already invested into Modern or is waiting for Fetchlands. And I think that probably sums up 90% of the people involved or interested in being involved with that format. So for me, it's the Fetchland reprint could be a big catalyst, some other avenue. Of a massive reprinting or pushing by Wizards that isn't Fetchlands. But I really think that, and I wrote about this last week, and some people disagreed with me strongly on it, but I think that Modern is going to continue to trend down. We have never seen a PTQ season not go up. Modern cards those staples that you look at kind of as the benchmark, the pillars, like Artburn Ravager, Fetchlands, Birthing Pod, Restoration Angel. A lot of these cards that you would look at and say, hey, this is modern, are still going down despite PTQ season starting. What that says to me is, like Ryan said, that this isn't new players coming into modern. This is people who are already in modern. So I think modern takes off again price-wise once the next big catalyst comes along, but I don't think this is that catalyst.
Well said. So anything else from anybody this week?
I think my pick of the week is wrapping up.
I want to give a shout-out to Ryan's Cricket.
Yep, shout-out to Ryan's Cricket.
Yeah.
Jiminy Cricket.
These are the ones outside, and my windows – the worst part is my windows are closed right now.
This is insistent crickets.
Yeah, like there was one in my living room last week. I'm pretty sure there's probably another one in my house somewhere. They're driving me crazy. So you mentioned them, I was tuning them out quite successfully. Thank you for that. So now I will go back to my cricketing.
I want to give a shout out to a listener. He saw my ad on the classifieds. He sold me a Mox Emerald for $62, which I bet he feels a little bit bad now that it's $98, but he was going to sell it anyway. But thank you for that. I forgot your name. I was sorry, I was in a rush. I was in the middle of the draft, but shout out to that guy.
How do you know he was a listener?
Well, because he said he heard the show, and he sold it to me because of that. He's like, I was asking for 60. He said that a buy-buy would offer him 62, and I said I matched a buy-buy. He says that I listened to the show, and I like what you guys are doing.
Sweet.
That's cool. Guys, just to let you know, anytime you interact with us, we will forget your name after getting value off you. So
it was a fair deal, actually.
No sarcasm came through there at all.
Oh, that wasn't rude. That was funny.
I was dead.
Bah humbug.
We're out of here. Brainstorm Brewery.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.